Srividya Upasana and Lalita Upasana. Before we proceed in detail to Lalita Sahasranama, let us look at what exactly Srividya means. Sri in Sanskrit denotes prosperity. Vidya means knowledge. We can take this to refer prosperity and knowledge, which means that by learning Srividya, one gains prosperity and knowledge. What is this knowledge? This knowledge is an absolute knowledge called para-knowledge. I'll talk about it little later. The second is, the meaning of Srividya is prosperity of knowledge. By knowing the ultimate para-knowledge, one prospers. Where does he prosper? He prospers at Sayujya, that is, at the transcendental level. Please don't be taken by some of the high-sounding names. It is very simple. As and when it comes, it will become easy. The third one, knowledge of prosperity. The third meaning, that is, what exactly is prosperity, is explained by this knowledge. So, this is the meaning of Srividya. In effect, we can always take Srividya to mean that knowledge which leads one from darkness to light, from ignorance to bliss, and from the ephemeral to the transcendental. That is, that which is limited to the unlimited. Now, we are talking about Vidya. When we are talking about Vidya, what is the meaning of Vidya? Vidya comes from the Sanskrit root vid, to know. To know, from that word has come Vedas. Vedas are one of the source books of Indian philosophical thought. Many people think Vedas alone constitute the essence of Hinduism, or it is the sole repository of Hindu thought, which this is incorrect. Vedas are called Sabda Pramana. In English, it can be translated under testimony. Please bear in mind, when we are translating from Sanskrit to English, the full meaning or the full import of the Sanskrit word will not come. The same word, testimony, is a very loose way of saying Sabda Pramana is that which is heard, that is being translated Sabda. Now, apart from Vedas, there are other sources of knowledge also that constitutes Vidya. Now, as I said, what exactly is Vidya? What exactly is knowledge? Knowledge, what is knowledge? Knowledge is, simply put, an awareness. You have a knowledge. Whether that knowledge is correct or incorrect is a factual judgment. Whether that knowledge is right or wrong is an ethical judgment. Let me explain it. For example, you look at somebody, you come across somebody, you see somebody. That is, you become aware. Then immediately you say, he is standing, he is sitting, he is speaking. See, he may be adopting any of the postures. That is a fact because it is happening. So that is called a factual knowledge. Other type, where you give some value judgment, you immediately say, he is good, he is bad. So this is value judgment. So any knowledge contains two parts. One is factual and another is ethical or judgmental. But when we are talking knowledge, what is the fundamental thing for this? That something is there, aware. If you want to say something about something or somebody, first thing is it has to be there. After which you attribute, you ascribe, you say that there are certain attributes. Here attribute, I am using the term attribute. In philosophy, it has more importance. It has better connotation. That is qualities. Initially, you can think it as qualities. You give a quality only when you are aware of the fact. So, Fundamentally, knowledge at its root is simple awareness. Now, for this awareness to come, we need at least three things. What are those three things? If I have to see, I have a tab in front of me through which I am speaking to you. So what is needed here? Number one, the tab has to be present, correct? Is that alone enough? It is not enough. I have to be present. For example, the tab may be here and I may be sitting in the next room. So I cannot see the tab. In that case, is that knowledge, that is my being aware of the tab, is not possible. So what else is needed? I am needed. That is subject. We call the tab, for instance, as the object. So the subject and object is there, right? To have an awareness, fundamental unit of knowledge. Now, let us extend this logic further. Supposing this tab is here, it is just lying in front of, behind me. I am alone, I am here alone. Is that knowledge possible? It is not possible. Technically, even for a third person to come in this room, they can always come and say, the tab is here by your side and you are here, but how is it you are not getting the knowledge? The answer is, I am not seeing it, I am not using it, I am not perceiving it. Therefore, to get awareness of anything, what we need is the subject, the object, that is the perceiver and the perceived, what sees and what is being seen, and plus the process of seeing. That is, the tab is here, I am here. Let us say I am blind. Can I see the tab? I can't see. So three things are needed. That is, the object, the subject, and the act of perception or the relationship. So in modern terminology, it is called S-O-R. That is, R-S-R-O, subject, object, relationship. Only with these three things are connected, knowledge takes place. That is, cognition takes place in your brain. Now, when you see this, what happens is, how do you see things, how they are? They are perceived through your five sense organs, plus one sense organ, which we call as mind. In only Western system, we have the five sense organs are taken into account. Mind is taken as something separate from the five sense organs. In philosophical systems of the West, that is how they take it. But in Indian system, mind is also a sensory organ, like your eye, your ear, your mouth, your skin, all these five. This is also is the mind, right? With the help of your sense organ, it can be a question of your seeing it, it may be a question of smelling it, it may be a question of hearing it, maybe a question of touching it. All these through sensations, these sensors, whatever you sense, they get transmitted into your brain through the synaptic gap from the nerve, from axon to dendrite, they go to your brain and the brain recognizes it. Now, then it is being segregated to another area where it is being recognized as a particular thing or a particular knowledge. Now here, what happens in this type of knowledge, we have to understand the real instrument is what? The real instrument is the mind. What is mind? What is brain? What is intellect? What is buddhi? And what is chitta? These are the points which have to clarify yourself. Because as you advance in Indian philosophical system, especially when you are entering into Sri Vidya Sadhana, especially with Lalita Sastrama, we should be clear as to what exactly we are speaking about. Simply saying Siddha, nobody understands. Everybody says it is Siddha. But what exactly is Siddha and what is chitta? We have to differentiate. Let us discuss further. That is, what is the difference? Now, what we have covered is, what is knowledge? What is awareness? How three things are essential to get knowledge? Subject, object, and relationship. And what is Sri Vidya? This is the fundamental thing we have to understand. Now let us see. To perceive something which we have, as I said, we need the mind. Now, let us try to find out what is brain, what is mind, what is intellect, what is buddhi, and what is chitta. The brain is only a physical organ, right? It doesn't have anything else other than until its purpose is known, its functionality is known only by the results it produces. Otherwise, when somebody goes in, when somebody remains in a comatose position, in coma, the brain is physically there. What exactly is happening, we don't know. Okay, brain. But the activity of the brain is your mind. That's a basic definition. When the mind becomes active, the neurons, the cells in your brain active and they light up. When they light up, you start that cognition. This is mind. Now we have to remember, when a brain receives these inputs and from the sensors, it performs the function of a CPU in a computer. It just collects information. It doesn't ascribe anything. This is the concept formation level. Today, your science, neurology is trying to find out so many ways of interpreting it. Our system, as we go in Lalita Sahasranama and Tantra Shastra, we'll be able to find out how easily our people have handled it. So, it is the mind is nothing but a CPU which contains information. Then, when you get information in a computer, what exactly do you do in the CPU? You use the keyboard and then you create separate folders. Photos, audio, then video, then document, file. Then even files you have, photos, you have different types of quality, JPEG, then JPG, PNG. Similarly, you get subclass. So, here your intellect decides on which information, number one, is to be given priority. This has some other implication, I'll tell you. So, why a particular thing is given priority? For example, there are hundreds of things in the room where I am addressing to you, but I am paying attention only to speaking to you. Why? That is a psychological reason, philosophical reason is there, right? Now, let us restrict ourselves to this. Now, when we do this, the mind, the intellect allocates a separate folder. That is, it gives two types of judgments. One judgment is factual, another is judgmental or ethical. It says 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. If it finds it is 5, you say it is incorrect. One judgment, that is intellect. Then it also gives another value judgment. It is right or wrong. So, somebody is a murderer, normally you say he is a criminal. So, these sort of judgments are being by intellect, which is discriminating. This is loosely translated as buddhi in Sanskrit. But the correct definition could be buddhi is slightly more than bland intellect, even though we do that, because there are certain value additions you are given. For instance, when you are giving a factual judgment, a fact, 2 plus 2, it is something which you are seeing concretely. That is, you have been taught three angles of a triangle is equal to 180 degrees. There are only limited geometrical shapes. For example, a dot, then you got a circle, and you got a triangle, then you got a square and variations of square. One of the interesting things you should know, some of the questions, there are only basically three basic shapes beyond which your mind may not conceive. I'll come to that. There is a reason for this. After this, but when you give a value judgment, like something is good, something is bad, how do you go with it? It's not necessary somebody should teach you. It is not as though somebody has to teach you that killing is good or stealing is bad. Certain things you do instinctively feel. But for argument's sake, you can say these are the only learned things. No. Even animals, even when they start hunting, they hesitate at times when they are hungry. What is it that drives them to do? This is an ultra mechanism above intellect, which chooses, which directs the intellect. But higher than this is chitta. Chitta is the individual aspect of the universal chitta, that is, the reality is Brahman, Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is the state of being, Chit is consciousness or pure knowledge, and bliss is pure ananda or bliss. At the individual, it is an individual chitta. Chitta is that knowledge which drives the buddhi to go after things or to do a certain thing in a certain way. How? The chitta vibrates. That's when you start thinking, it is shaped by your karma palas. The vibration that have been created either by your mind or by your action, for the time being, we'll restrict it to ourselves for the present birth only. In general, it will go to the earlier birth. Because the reason is, I'll explain, it is not very tough, it may look abstract, it's not very simple. What chitta is, see, you take this example. Somebody likes something. Somebody wants to become an engineer. Now, you ask a child. See, a child is the Parabrahma. Up to the age of, see, not even age, up to 60 days, even up to the age of one, the child constantly keeps on smiling in its sleep. Why? Because it is enjoying the supreme Brahmananda, that it has been one with the reality. Only when we start planting the ideas, when the child starts interacting with the universe, when it starts interpreting its sensation, and we teach them certain facts, and we also teach them certain values, the mind becomes corrupt. The child, or as we grow, we also become corrupt. We become happy, we become sad. In Indian philosophy, the original nature of human being is to be happy. And also it is always soul. You are always ever happy. That is your nature. And you are always full in terms of knowledge. Watch of it later. Now, when these starts coming, now when you see, as the child grows, when the child is hardly 4 or 5 years, it develops certain tendencies other than the ones parents, especially mother, teaches it. You observe the child. It has an inkling of doing something. Sometimes you find some children born with a special inclination to perform certain things. Some people are born geniuses in mechanical skill. Somebody is born a genius in fine art. Somebody becomes a great singer. Somebody becomes a great writer. How? These things are determined by the results of the actions you have performed in your earlier life. There are different three types of results of actions you perform. One is Sanjeevita Karma, Anami Karma, Prarabdha Karma. Of all these karmas, whenever you do an action, it creates energy, because thoughts are nothing but the vibration that take place in your brain. When your brain cells light up, it is being transmitted in the form of an electrical energy and also in the form of a magnetic energy. As all of you know, energy can never be destroyed once it is created. It is a different matter that it cannot be created as well. Also, it can only be transformed. So where do these energies go? See, I have reached my age of 72 now. From the age of 5, I have been seeing, and lot of thoughts have been going in my mind. And 55 years I had some thought, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 15 years. I have been thinking. See, mind has been thinking constantly of so many things. And its energy, as you know, scientifically cannot be destroyed. Where does that energy go? Where does it go? Secondly, whenever you think of something, it always creates an opposite and equal reaction in the form of a thought. For example, if you take a choice in life, you always have, your mind has a tendency to take the other choice. For example, if you want to go to some place, immediately the moment you decide, think this, you have to analyze your thing. thinking, I have to go. Immediately you think, why should I go? Then your mind in a split second decides in favor of one or the other. This specific determination is done because of your predisposition. This comes to a question of whether you have fate ruling you or are you free. That is, whether if everything in your life is limited or whether you are independent. The answer is, it is both, because you are permitted only to react. You don't create choice. For example, you respond to choices in this world. At any given point of time, any action which you take is limited to X number of choices. But after some time, if you look at it, you had X plus 10 choices also would have come to your notice. So, you are free to the extent that the number of choices, you are free to choose among the number of choices presented to you, but you are not free to know all the choices. That is, your free will is there and also there is determinism. Now, when your mind, now coming back to Chitta, Chitta, because of the energy it creates, it has a tendency to go after certain things. And it keeps on going after the senses, and it goes in different directions. So it modifies the things which you see. Therefore, the effort is to quell the mind. Yogaha Chitta Vritti Nirodaha. The purpose of yoga is quell the modification, that is, the modification, this the cessation of the modification of Chitta is called yoga. Yoga means union of individual self to the supreme self, that is Jivatma to Paramatma. So this is how your mind perceives. And one more important before I proceed to the next point. When you perceive anything, you would always observe that you always operate under a handicap, which people forget. Your mind is shackled, or you are conditioned by two things in your mind. One is the space and the concept of space, and another is the concept of time. These are the two goggles through which you perceive the whole world and think. For example, you try to think whether it is possible for you to do something without reference to space or time. Whether you can write something without reference to space or time. We go to such an extent, whether you are in a position to think of something without reference to space and time. Okay, till now, what we have done is, what is Sri Vidya and what is knowledge, what is the process of knowledge, and what exactly is mind, intellect, buddhi and chitta. Before I proceed further, if you have any doubt, please let me know. So we will start going one step by step. I'll explain any other question. If you don't remember anything, you can always pose this question in the WhatsApp group. One by one, I can ask you, Mr. Stalini, any doubt? And also you can tell me whether I'm going fast or slow, whether the methodology is okay, whether any technical problem in terms of audio. You can, yes, Ms. Stalini. Anything else you have been able to follow so far?
Yeah, yes, sir. Very clear and really nice, sir. And really enjoying it. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Pratyush Singh. Any doubt, any questions, any clarifications?
Nothing. All is very clear.
Okay.
It's just one query. So, Chitta is nothing but a memory. Chitta is nothing but a memory. Is that correct?
No, slightly more than that. See, as I said in the initial stages, when you translate from Sanskrit to English, it's very difficult. See, normally we believe in translating everything into English. I think there is one of the failings we Indians have, in the sense that when you say dharma, people have to say it is called righteousness. Dharma is definitely more than righteousness, right? Don't you agree? Being self-righteous is not being dharmic, right? In fact, being self-righteous is a negative concept, right? Similarly, disposition is something that more than memory, because If you are talking about memory, then your memory doesn't recollect what had happened to you, yeah, about 20 years back. Right? If it is so, but what is driving you is something, the accumulation of the vasanas. I will use the term little later. Now I am slowly taking you. Immediately I start taking vasanas, then you will get confused. What is that smell? What is that vasana? Even though people may know, so I will use that. Okay. Now I want to familiarize you with the initial thought, so that as we go by, I think we can go to the thought. But it is, to answer your question directly, chitta is more than memory, but it includes memory. Okay, but memory does not include chitta. Chitta includes memory as well. Right? People without memory exist because of chitta. Now you understood the difference? People who are in coma without memory, without sensation, they also have chitta. That even physical reactions prove that. Any other question? Yes? Who is left? Anandi, any question? Any question? Hello? I think you are muted. Yeah? Anandi, any questions? Any doubts? Probably. Okay. Then Shalini, any doubts? Is that clear?
No. Yes, sir. Very clear, sir.
You have been able
As
to...
As you said, chitta is mind, which encompasses all the other, you know, the chitta. Emotions, feelings, memories and everything.
Yeah, yeah. One slight thing. It is higher than mind. It is not mind. It includes mind, higher than mind. So in Sanskrit, we have to be very careful because chitta is higher. See, mind is included in chitta. That is, chitta directs the mind. It is just like a principal directing a school teacher. Okay, so it is on a higher pedestal. Okay, it's all abstracted. It will come here. In essence, what you say is right. Now, let me... Next. Now, this knowledge, which is conditioned, which is dependent, which is not absolute. How? Because whatever I come to know is only conditional. It is determined by, number one, the external factors. Number two, the perception I make, which is again not in my hands. So, everything we learn is conditioned, and they are related to by the cause and relationship. This I will explain. So, everything you know is not 100% correct. Everything is determined by lot of other things. For instance, I'll give you an example. This will also give you an example of what space and time performed in our life every day. Now, all of you might be watching IPL. When you are watching IPL, supposing some batsman is given out. So, when the DRS is given, you watch when you see that, the earlier time when you saw that batsman was out, but when it is seen from the other angle, he remains not out and the umpire gives not out. Now, what exactly do you mean by this? Because the perception, what we perceive, is only conditional. We see only one aspect of reality. What we see is not what is out there. We see certain things on two factors based on a thing which is outside us. How it presents to ourselves, we see. Just like in a TV, if you sit in one angle and watch a cricket match, in that angle, when the camera picks up, only that angle we know. The other angle we do not know. So, how the reality presents ourselves is one factor. Second is how you perceive because of our conditions. Right? You sometimes, see, today quantum proves in quantum mechanics, when you perceive a thing, you alter the reality, the thing itself, and the thing also changes you. The atom configuration disturbed at the individual, the subject who sees it, and the object which is being perceived. So, when we do not understand things as they are, we do not understand, right? This is as far as the object presenting ourselves. Now just to extend a little further. In life, you never know any fact. It may sound nonsensical even, but what you perceive or what you see as a fact is only an impression of what you have seen. You follow? There is a difference. What you see as an impression is determined by your mental state at that time and the pressures you are and what is where it is building. So what you see is only an aspect of reality and also an impression of what is out there. In real, what exactly is out there, we do not know. Let me give an example. You see a flower in front of you, you call it a rose. Now you call it as a rose, as a rose. Now, you remove that rose color, would you still call it as a rose? Yes, because there are black roses. Okay. You remove all the colors. Would there still be... So you remove the aspect of attribute of reality, rose. But still you continue to call it as rose. Now I'll put it in a easy to follow. At the age of 10, I was totally different in physics, in mental thought, the way I behaved, how I interacted. At the age of 10, including my face, hair, everything, my attitude, behavior, everything, I changed. At the age of 25, 30, 35, 40, 50, 55, 60, 70. Now, this has no relation to what I was about throughout my life. Yet, people still call me as Ramanan. How is it possible? My name, my face doesn't look the same as it was. My thought doesn't look the same as it was. Thoughts do not represent myself. There is a change. The way I behave is different. Then how do you call it? Till we call it. Now I'll quote an example, then it will finish, then we'll go to Srividya direct. There's a beautiful argument between Adi Shankaracharya, that is the sect, and also Buddhism. See, the difference between Adi Shankaracharya, system Advaita, and the Buddhism is totally diametrically 180 degrees opposition. Buddhism says change alone is permanent. Adi Shankaracharya says everything is permanent. Only change doesn't exist, only permanent. That reality alone exists. It's totally opposing you. Now, Buddhists want to corner Acharya and then they ask him, one second. They light a candle in front of him. Tell him, Acharya, you are seeing the candle. When they light, it gives light. It actually lights up the room, it loses energy. When something, many people think Indians do not know all these intricacies. We know that when the light burned, it burned light energy. Today people think our luminescence only we people, Westerners have found it. No, it is there in our ancient texts also. So this is an example. The energy it has spent and the candlestick has melted, everything has come down. Now, Acharya, will you not agree that the candle which you have seen a few minutes earlier is not the same as the candle which you are seeing? Then Acharya says, 100% right. Then he says, Buddha says, exactly that is our system. Change alone is real. There is nothing but change in this world. You think this argument is final? Shankaracharya replies, that is the reason he is called as the intellectual giant. He replies 100% what he says is true. But I have a small doubt. If everything is changing, if everything has changed, by reference to which do you say that there is a change? That is, unless you have some frame of reference which is fixed, you can never say that it has changed, because something is permanent. Some things are changing. Only when there is something permanence is there, you can observe the changes. So, Brahman is Nitya, the world is Anitya, it is only an appearance. Therefore, permanence alone is real, change is unreal. Now, we'll go to little later in Advaita when we discuss that angle also I'll give you. Now, this knowledge, what we perceive, through the sense organs, which is limited by the concept of space and time, and also by samskaras, our vasanas, is transitory. This is temporary. This is not perfect. We do not know the real nature of things. If knowledge, what we acquire this way, is perfect, why do we keep on revising? We are updating our knowledge. Because when you say that I have found out certain things, okay, knowledge ends, no? Today, why do we say knowledge? It is very difficult to do everything. Because simple reason is scientists do not admit it. Because you do not know. The nature is not bound to reveal its nature to everyone. Your time in the world is hardly even, not even a flicker of a second. When you refer to, say, for example, a mountain or a rock, you know, one of the oldest rock formation in India, the whole world, is the Western Ghats and the Deccan Plateau. And in term, they are millions of years old. Everybody says they have no sense. They do not like, see, the, you know, the mountains, they do not have life. Stones do not have life, etc. Hinduism never calls that. Hinduism never calls anything lifeless. No. Hinduism has got two sets of definition only. Chetana, achetana, that which moves, that which has consciousness, and that which does not have consciousness. Then that which moves and that which does not move. That's all. Everything is life. Only thing is, you do not have enough skills to understand it. For example, we have millions of bacteria swimming around us. Is that not a fact? We don't see it. Do you mean to say that they don't exist? Because their existence is not visible to eye, and sometimes something exists in the world which is not even a fraction of existence in terms of our time calculation. Similarly, in the time span of a rock which exists millions of years, as a human being, you don't even come into its purview at all. So you don't exist. So this sort of imperfect knowledge is called avidya, nishayans, basic fact. Now, the later on, because of this imperfect information, you become unhappy in life. You go after these pleasures of senses. I won't say you go after, you go, you just seek pleasure, you want to enjoy them, and you become attached to them, you become happy or unhappy. Because of your mind, nothing gives you happy because the mind ascribes the value. For example, what you have loved about 10 years back, you may hate it, right? The things do not change, but your perception changes, you become unhappy. Why? This is because of your imperfect antakarana, that is your inner instrument, namely mind, which is controlled by chitta. This limited knowledge is only for us people. But there is the true nature of things lying behind everything which we perceive, and that is called Brahman, the reality. This is the one which has been declared by the seekers of truth. They are the rishis. Rishis are those people who have concentrated, meditated upon the inner truth and found out this is called Brahman. Now, why should we meditate? Has anybody asked this question? Why mind? Because there are two ways of knowing things. In Western system, from one point we differ. So two aspects we differ from Western in terms of knowledge. First level is that, what is the source of knowledge? What do we say? Knowledge is, first thing is that, ex nihilo nihilpet is the basic dictum in Western philosophy. That is, out of nothing, nothing comes. That is one aspect. Yes, you are right. No, if there is nothing, from out of nothing, nothing will come. Right? No, correct. No, it is very sensible. But again, Indian philosophy says, full comes out of full. That is, out of fullness will come fullness. That is, Om Purnamada Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. This is full. That is full. Having taken full, out of full, full remains full. Maybe you think this is some nonsense. It is not. When I was delivering a lecture among mathematicians, they started laughing. Then I said, please wait. Our people doing this Upanishad, they were not poor. Now, lively demonstrate to right now, straight. For example, I'll tell you, I have been speaking on Sri Vidya for the past about 30-35 minutes. Right? From your point of view, the topic, what I am going to speak, out of which your knowledge is absolutely zero, nil, compared to what you are hearing now. Probably you may know, but again, you don't know the same level. Right? Now, whatever I know, now when I am saying I, it applies to you also, anything you relate. When I have taken everything, whatever I know, that full, I have taken whatever I can give you in full, I have spoken to you everything. Because I have spoken and told you everything, has my knowledge become reduced? Full, having taken full out of full, full remains full. That is the Brahman. The reality is reflected in everything. It is all pervasive. It is immanent. It is abstract. It is the substance and substratum of everything. What is the basic nature of these things? That reality, that Brahman is described. It is not defined. It is described in the form of Sat, that is being, Chit, pure consciousness, why pure or impure? Consciousness at the individual is a limited consciousness. Chit, Ananda, bliss. These are the attributes of reality. So, when you want to know, realize the Brahman, you will have to use the tools you are endowed with, that is your mind and Chitta. As I said earlier, Chitta vibrates, it creates a lot of modification, and that has to be stopped. So, in that process, the processes are three. Indian systems have three sources or three methodologies. One is one methodology is by sound, mantra. The second is sacred geometry, yantra. And the third one is the combination of both, and certain physical aspect is called tantra. Mantra is the management or the understanding the sound waves. Now, in the next class, I'll tell you, let us not confuse with mantra with alphabet. This is a basic mistake we commit. Alphabet has nothing to do with mantras. Because when you translate mantra, it gives you no meaning in alphabet. It is not. It is only a sound that gives you the effect. The second is yantra. You know, all yantras are space. We are handling space in yantra. Then tantra. Tantra means that which relieves you. That which gives you the knowledge from the limited knowledge. So, these three. Mantra, yantra and tantra. All these three, mantra, yantra and tantra, are different sources to reach the reality by meditation. Then you have different types of approaches depending on your disposition. One is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Raja Yoga is your controlling, regulating your mind, the Chitta. So these three approaches, four approaches, as given by Bhagavad Gita and also as explained in Bhagavad Gita, and the three tools, mantra, yantra and tantra, all these are found in Sri Lalita Sahasranama. Three Sahasranamas are rated to be the great among the Sahasranamas, even though hundreds of Sahasranamas are there, depending on the number of deities. However, these three, one is Ganesha Sahasranama, and another is Vishnu Sahasranama, and the Lalita Sahasranama. These are the three Sahasranamas which include all the three aspects. In all the three aspects, the presence of Tantra and Yantra is very clearly delineated, in very clearly shown in Sri Lalita Sahasranama. Whereas in Vishnu Sahasranama and Sri Ganesha Sahasranama, they are not explicit. You will have to go after it to understand it, because it is very difficult to see. You will be in Vishnu, here you will have a different level, they will keep on explaining, and in Vishnu Sahasranama it will be a mixture. So that is the reason why this Lalita Sahasranama is more important for one to follow. Another speciality of Sri Lalita Sahasranama is that, unlike the other Sahasranama, there will be no repetition of any of the Namavali. That is, in other Sahasranamas, Ru, Cha, Iti, Bodha, Bhavya, Bhavana, that is, Vishnu Sahasranama, I am also team, so you will find lot of Bodhatma, Paramatma, Cha, Muktanam, Paramatma, all these things, you know, even conjunction won't appear. One word will not appear. Lalita Sahasranama, Sri Lalita Sahasranama is the direct Sri Srividhya Upasana and it came Tantra. It has 31, it has an introduction, Purvanga, 51 slokas and the main body 182 which explain the 1000 names. Out of this, the Purvanga 51 contains, it hides the 51 Bijaksharas of Devi. Similarly, in Saundarya Lahari, the first 47 are written by Ananda Lahari. It is believed to have been written by, compiled by Ganesha, and the balance, about 57, are composed by Adi Shankaracharya. In all the balance 57, that is, after 57, you leave the last one, that is the one more or less a Palashruti. In the 56, excepting 5 slokas, he has hidden the 51 Aksharas, each Akshara inserted in each sloka he has given. That is why Saundarya Lahari is considered as one of the greatest Mahamantras along with Sri Lalita Sahasranama. And Lalita Sahasranama is how Lalita Sahasranama represents Sri Vidya and what exactly is Sri Vidya and what exactly are the texts one has to follow and how Lalita Sahasranama is structured and how one should study and perform the Lalita Sahasranama, we shall discuss in the next class because we have some time to question and answer. In Lalita Sahasranama, some information I will tell you. Many people today do this Lalita Sahasranama with any flowers or anything they do because they think that anything they can offer. Because when you are touching this Lalita Sahasranama, you have to follow the procedure laid by Hayagriva. This is revealed by Hayagriva, an avatar of Mahavan Vishnu, to Agastya, who is a combination of Mitra and Varuna. Right? So, a greatest saint, an avatar of Vishnu, his teaching is another one of the greatest saints, a direct disciple of Shiva himself, who is the founder of the Tamil language and who is also one of the people who has been instrumental in writing the Agastya Vyakarana, which is not in Sanskrit, and who has contributed Veda Suktas, whose wife Lopa Mudra is Rishika, she has contributed Veda. So such great personalities are exchanging thought. There the procedure is very clear. How the Sri Lalita Sahasranama is to be chanted, how the pujas are to be conducted, puja vidhi is given. As per that, you are supposed to perform the puja for Lalita Devi only by these three. One is Bilva, another is Lotus, another is Tulasi. Beyond this, whatever you do, it is your decision. But as far as I am concerned, if I am going by what is in the original text, I would always advise to go by the original text, which we find in Lalita. Similarly, in Lalita Sahasranama itself, you find all sources. Whatever authority you want to know in Lalita Sahasranama, let not anybody tell you, I'll give you the translation, I'll give you the meaning. That will give you the correct path. There is no point in going outward. Because somebody has given you a very good reference. That book, commentary, is given to Saubhagya Bhaskaram. This is one of the best commentaries written by Bhaskara Raya. I tell you how great he was. And that is the basis on which I will be delivering my lecture. I do not take a normal, regular translations, no. This is the authenticated commentary by Sri Bhaskara Raya. He was born in 1685 or 1690. He lived about 70, 80 years. And he is one of the greatest Sri Vidya Upadhyaya. He has written more than 40 works, and I'll narrate about him also. Then the probably in the next class also, I'll complete the introduction part in detail with all those things taken together. And what is Brahma Vidya and what is Sri Vidya, how one has to go about it. And later, if she permits, I think possibly it will happen. We'll do that in the third class onward. We'll directly go into the Purvanga portion of Sri Lalita Sahasranama. Now, I would like to open the floor for you. You can give me the any doubts or questions you can ask me. Any doubts? Yes. Yes. Mr. Shalini, any doubts?
Sir, very explanatory, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I have a doubt. You said Lalita Sahasranama represents Sri Vidya.
Hmm.
So, obviously, that is part of the, you know, Sri Vidya Upasana, everything, isn't it? And even the Saundarya Lahari also represents Sri Vidya Upasana? Saundarya
Lahari. Yes, but not to this extent.
Uh-huh.
But in the meanwhile, sorry, I was about to tell you, since the ladies are present, since we are talking about Sri Vidya, I request the ladies, for those 5 days, please refrain from attending the class. Just to give me a message, I may not be able to attend for 5 days. So that this is a very Sri, difficult Upasana, and I will never take chances with Sri Vidya Upasana. Okay? Yeah. Any other doubt, Mr. Shalini? You are able to follow clearly? The thoughts are clear? You've been able to follow?
Able to understand clearly, and it's really explanatory. Thank you so much. Learning a lot, actually. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. Then, Mr. Pratyush? Yes, I
yes,
see.
Sir.
Everything
is fine. I'm learning a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Then, Anandi, anything else? Any doubt? Yes? You are muted? Hello? Hello? I think it is unmuted. I think it is muted. I think some. Then Apurva, she is there. Apurva, any doubt?
No, sir. It's very clear. It's very clear.
You have been able to follow?
Yes, sir.
Not complicated, right? In case any of you feel it's feeling little abstract or complicated, please do let me know, so that I can try to make it simpler from the next class. In case you have any other doubt, please ask me. Otherwise, if you don't remember, you please post it in the group. I'll be able to reply. And sometimes if you have any serious doubt, you can always call me, excepting between